Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
For Bills fans.
Let's go, Buffalo!
By Bills fans.
Only Buffalo is going to win it!
This is the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast with Brad the Bruiser Eichhorn and Alex Jones.
This is pandemonium!
Here's Brad the Bruiser Eichhorn.
And welcome back for another edition of the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast. I am Brad the Bruiser Eichhorn, joined alongside Alex Jones. Happy to be joining you here. It's been a little while, so we have a ton to catch up on. And part of that is the schedule. Of course, we had the NFL Draft just about 2.5 weeks ago, so a lot's to cover here, Alex. Before we get off anything, what is your pulse on the Buffalo Bills right now, Alex?
You know, when you're the top seed in your division and one of the top five, top three, to be honest, teams in your conference, you're going to have a tougher schedule. And, you know, that's what the Bills have. It's a tough schedule. They're also, at the moment, two of the most in-demand games in the NFL right now are the Ravens game and the Patriots Sunday night game.
Yeah, some definitely.
I saw graphics on the right now, like the average price of a ticket at Highmark for the Ravens game is $1,500, and the Patriots game is $1,200.
Holy moly! I mean,
yeah,
and I was looking at cost too, and yep, everything's kind of spiking up that way. So I mean, tickets are already in high demand. We'll see if they cool down at all. Backstory here for our group of friends. We do an annual Bills game once a year. We're here. We have season tickets, but we have outsiders come here to Buffalo. We usually have, you know, a little barbecue get-together the night before the game, and then that game, you know, we go to. Well, the way it's been done in years past, the guy who organizes the tickets here, we'll call Mr. Spike down there in Goodyear, Arizona. Mr. Spike is ordering tickets right away. We said this year let's cool down a little bit. He's a listener of this podcast, so is that good advice to wait right now, or do we need to see how things play out? Because right now they're eyeing the Saints game at 1 o'clock kickoff in September.
I think you waited out. I like that Saints game as a good game for you to go to. It's going to be a fun one. The 1 o'clocks in September is one of two directions. You know, going for being a season ticket holder since 2013, almost a decade and change now. They're a real hit or miss. It could be a beautiful sunny day where you're running back and forth to the stands because it's so hot. It could also be 44 degrees and downpour rain the entire time. The one I think of is the Texans game from 2 years ago. Davis Webb as the starter.
Yeah, I would 100% think of that. I mean, we'll see down the stretch here, but I mean, let's get into it. So, schedule, more recent news. We can break down the draft coming up here, all that coming up here on the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast. So let's go ahead and start things out here. They kick off the year on Sunday Night Football against Baltimore. Betting line's already out here. It's a little early in my opinion, but right now the Bills come in at 1.5-point favorites. We'll see how it plays out. We haven't even hit training camp. There's been no preseason, nothing right now. So take that for what you will. At this rate right now, I'm not surprised that Buffalo kick off this one as favorites being at home. The way they address the defensive line in the draft and in free agency, I think Buffalo would be poised to start out the last season at the old Highmark Stadium with a W. And I think it's favorable matchup here for the Bills at home against a very good Ravens team year in, year out. They extended Derrick Henry. They're going to be tough. But I think it does look slightly favorable here in a tight matchup.
Yes, it does. I do not disagree at all, Brad. I like our chances. I mean, to be honest, the Bills are you got to be, it's got to be your favorite year in, year out, right? I mean, they're a favorite for the Super Bowl. They just, to be honest, got better in the offseason. They, you know, they've almost exclusively gotten better. So, I mean, I like, you like what you see.
One thing that I find interesting here going into week two is that it's one of the few 1 o'clock kickoff games this team actually plays this year. And I don't know, that's always a funky place to play. I hate to call it a trap game, but I feel like it is. I mean, we know this is a team who's still on the rebuild, still trying to look to break their postseason drought. We know a little something about that here in Buffalo. Right now, the Jets have Justin Fields coming in at quarterback. They have a new head coach in Aaron Glenn. I think this is a game that Buffalo should be able to win, but I always look at this like a trap game, and I could easily see them walking out of MetLife with a loss.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, is that the Bills, historically, the Jets play them tight, you know. I think it's going to be a tough one. I think Aaron Glenn's going to have that defense in really good shape. He's a really good coordinator. I think there's good pieces there, but I don't know how much offensively they're going to be able to put together.
And it's funny that you mentioned his defensive mind here. You know what? Robert Saleh was too. Robert Saleh, I think, is a great defensive mind who, I think his arm got twisted on some moves. So did the GM there as well, because I think they had to bring in some guys that they didn't want to, i.e. Aaron Rodgers. Push from the owner here. I think the owner makes that team what they are, and
completely,
not in a good
completely
way.
Completely agree, Brad.
I mean,
completely agree.
Just not good. So
absolutely.
But like you said, tough defense, and that's what those times we went in here in 2022, it wasn't Zach Wilson beating the Buffalo Bills. It was the Jets defense, maybe the refs, beating the Buffalo Bills. And that Monday night game where Aaron Rodgers goes out on the fourth play, yeah, Bills should have won that one. It was the Jets defense that won that game. Could be a potential trap game, but they could potentially start out, depending how the Ravens goes, 1-1, 2-2, or 2-0. Yeah.
I mean, you easily, the path to 2 and starting it, the Bills also are pretty good starters to the year. They started out 4-1 last year, and would not be shocked to see them repeat that start this year.
All right, move to week three. Hosting Miami here on a Thursday night game. From a personal standpoint, I hate Thursday night football games, at least home ones, because it kind of screws up your whole work schedule. I'm probably going to have to leave work early that Thursday, and if I want to be exhausted all day Friday, I might be best off taking that Friday off. Most other days of the week, no, I'm not having to do that. Maybe a Monday night game. But as someone who plans on going to every home game this year, don't love that Thursday night game, but I do like the matchup for Buffalo. Playing Miami in cooler conditions for both teams, it's not going to be one of those games where you're getting sunburn if you're in Western New York, which, yes, can happen. You can't get sunburn in Buffalo. But I think it's a favorable matchup for the Bills here in a team that really needs to win, or they're going to find themselves, I think, looking for a new head coach after this season in the Miami Dolphins.
I do too, and it's very interesting because the Dolphins are a bit of in a state of disrepair right now. And if things start to go sideways, if they start out slow or don't have success for whatever reason, or you see Tua get hurt again, I would not be shocked if Mike McDaniels gets fired midway through the season.
And I could see that with how aggressive Ross has been as the owner of the Dolphins. I wouldn't be shocked there. And this is another guy who, like Robert Saleh, nothing but admiration. I admire Mike McDaniels as an innovative offensive play caller, but as the head of that organization, you know, they talk about how important culture is in the NFL, and to hear all the shots fired from the Poyer camp, I you know, kind of an inside look into the Miami Dolphins, I really don't know that they have a very good culture down there in Miami. Who am I to say? I don't cover this team day in and day out. From the outside looking in, I'm going to say their culture looks very murky.
Yeah, and I think it was kind of like they had an idea in mind. They brought this guy in, had some success, but it never really You know, like, the thing is, with the Bills, they had that step-up success, right? They went next level, next level, next level, next level. With the Dolphins, they haven't really ever taken that next step. You know, they haven't really made that big run that you expected from them at any point.
All right, let's move down to week four, where the New Orleans Saints will come to town. I already talked about wanting to go to this game here as our annual Bills game for our out-of-town friends. And like this one as well, New Orleans is a team in transition right now. It's a three-tiered quarterback battle at this point. Derek Carr officially retired. I never thought he was the answer there regardless. But Kellen Moore coming in here, a first-year head coach, after being with Philadelphia last year, was with Dallas before that, worked with the Lions. He was, you know, the backup quarterback in Dallas. I remember him winning the Fiesta Bowl as the quarterback of Boise State against TCU in the Fiesta Bowl back in the day. I like Kellen Moore all around. I think he will have success, but it's not going to be this season.
No, I don't. I don't disagree either. I think it's a team that's been through some cap situations, getting some older players off the books. And I think they're in sort of a transition period. I like some of the stuff they've done. But there's a few guys there that just really never stepped up, which is really, you know, sad to see. One of the ones was Trevor Penning out of University of Northern Iowa, former teammate of Spencer Brown. Got drafted very high, looked like he was going to be, you know, a next big thing on offensive line, and has just never really put it together for him.
We'll go into week five here. New England coming to town, and this is an interesting game. It's Sunday Night Football on NBC, and it's the Stephon Diggs return game here to Western New York. They played last year, wasn't a big deal, and we know Houston won that game. But New England coming in here, do you expect it to be just a bunch of boos? Because I think people love what Stephon Diggs when he was here, but the way things ended, it ended bad. I think as bad as you would think, and the Buffalo Bills decided, you know, now's our time. Let's move off. Let's reset here. What's it going to be like, in your opinion, in his return and Mike Vrabel's first game here as a head coach of the New England Patriots? How do you see this game working out?
I think it's going to... I'm very interested. I think it's going to tell a lot with the first few games leading up to this. The Patriots could come in as an undefeated team, looking like they're, and you're going to hear all the Patriots fans back. I don't know. You could also see where the Patriots come in and losing record on a young squad, and maybe Diggs just doesn't look like himself coming off a pretty severe knee injury, a season-ending one. To me, it just, I'm intrigued by this matchup, but I'm not afraid of this matchup, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This almost feels like when the Bills started out 2-0 and faced against the Patriots, the Rex Ryan year, where fans were all hyped, and then the better team came in and just dropped them. And you're like, oh yeah, they're just more talented than us. Yeah, that makes sense.
Other Patriot thought I want to point out there, I like Drake May. I liked how we played. We saw him down the stretch. What was it? Two of the last three games the Bills have were against the Patriots. And I saw him take steps forward. I know he didn't play much in that last game because it was all scrubs in that one for both squads, including Joe Milton. But how I look at Drake May here is I feel like the media has already anointed him. They're already wanting the next Tom Brady. I feel like they were anointing Mac Jones in a similar fashion. I think he has a bigger upside than Mac Jones, and I think Drake May can't make it the right weapons. But, I mean, all right, his receivers is Stephon Diggs coming off a season-ending injury. Who knows how early he'll be playing. Obviously, a fan favorite here in Mac Hollins' last season for the Bills. He's on the Patriots receiving squad. Outside of that, I mean, not a lot of big-name targets on the wide receiver side. I think their offensive line is still a concern. I think it's an interesting matchup, but I'm not ready to anoint Drake May as the second coming of Tom Brady.
Neither am I.
All right, let's move down the line here. Let's go down to Monday Night Football in Week 6. This is a doubleheader, so it's a 7:15 Eastern Standard Time kickoff against the Atlanta Falcons. And I think a team that took some steps under Raheem Morris But some questionable moves. I question his hire to begin with. I know Bill Belichick was mentioned in the front running for that. Regardless, I mean, look at the Commander game down the stretch there. That was a game that Atlanta should have won, and they blew it and lost to the Commanders in overtime. That's just a very small sample size, but maybe we'll have a better idea of who this Atlanta team is by week six, but right now, I'm not buying Atlanta.
No, me either. Honestly, I don't have a lot of faith in them as a team, to be honest.
All right. Bye week in week seven. I know we had chat about that via text message. Alex here. Talk about your concerns about the bye week being so early here in the season.
So there is a pro and a con to it. A pro is you're getting it early, meaning you can treat some of those lingering issues and some of those the soft tissue injuries, things like that. You can get them rest early, which when you think of it like a sliding percentage scale, you may just be at 85% and you can get back to 95%. Because no one's 100% during the season. On top of that, Larry Ogunjobi and Heck are both coming in off suspension, which will give them a week to get ready, get back in the speed of things, get back up on the game plan, everything like that. So that is your positive. Your negative is you then have 9 weeks, or 10 weeks, essentially, after that, where you don't have a rest. So you don't get the break later in the season, but an earlier bye, sometimes teams like the Eagles last year had a week four bye, I believe. So, you know, it's one of those things where you're just given your bye, you don't choose it. But you know what? Week seven isn't the worst it could be.
Agreed. I think that's pretty well said at this point. The late buys are great because it can help you mend and get healthy towards the end of the season. But at this point here, it's early enough. Like I said, some of the soft tissue, I don't know. I don't find it super concerning. But again, you've played the game, Alex, your whole life here. Yeah, I've never played one down of football, and that's for the benefit of everyone else.
And you know, it's again, you're never 100%, but those bye weeks, you get a moment. A lot of times for the guys who are on the pro end, it's time to check in with their families, do stuff around the house, get everything going, get their bodies right. You know, it's a big recovery week. And so having that early in the season, and then having essentially two borderline starters or two heavy rotation pieces come in completely fresh for the next week, he's also a huge boon.
All right, well, then after a bye week, chance to get fresh, they head to Carolina, take on where Sean McDermott was before he came here, where Brandon Beam was before he came to Western New York. They're both part of the Carolina Panthers organization, obviously a very different team here. How do you view this game down there in Carolina, where I know there's a lot of transplant Bills Mafia down there? I know my grandparents, when they retired, they moved down to the Carolinas. I think there's going to be a lot of Bills presence on this game against this team, a team who's still on the uptick.
Absolutely, Brad. And I think, you know, there is don't get me wrong, I think Carolina is a better team than people are giving them credit for.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They showed a lot of fight to end the season last year, and I feel like they kind of figured things out in the last, like, eight games. But at the same time, they're a young quarterback with a newer system. They have an offense that's pretty good to good at times. But it's going to be a fun test for the Bills. That feels like another quote-unquote trap game. But I think if the Bills go into Carolina and handle business, they should be able to come out of that one with a W.
All right, let's go to week nine, a game that's going to be huge here. Already have my second ticket booked for him. My brother said Chiefs game, mine. He traditionally comes up every year around Halloween. So perfect weekend here. Halloween's on a Friday. And then the Sunday after Halloween, Kansas City is here at 4:25. So will this be a trick or a treat for the Bills at this point?
You know, It's a little of both. You know what I mean? It is a little bit of both. Coming into the game, you're coming off your bye. You're coming off a big game against Carolina, who are, you know, it's easy to overlook those types of guys. You know what I mean, Brad? It's easy to overlook teams like Carolina. And so, cut for a second, Brad. I'm so sorry. My brain just shattered.
I mean, who knows where Kansas City is going to be at this point next year? And that's the bigger thing. Is this the same team who is winning games by, you know, 2 points, by 1 point, with the help of a botch play, with the help of a questionable call? Is it going to be that kind of Chiefs game team coming in? Because they face a pretty daunting schedule starting out here. Let's look at the Chiefs before we get into this one. They're at the Chargers. Tough game, divisional game. They host the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, a rematch of the Super Bowl. That should be a fantastic game. At the Giants, all right, I'll probably give them a win in that one. Baltimore at home, granted, it's at Arrowhead. That's a tough game. Baltimore is very good at the road at Jacksonville. Sure, give them a W. Lions are going to be a tough game coming up in week 6. Week 7, I think a Raider team that is taking a step forward. And then I think a really tough game at home. Look at all these tough home games. Washington Commanders, and then they go to Arrowhead. So at least for Kansas City, they have the positivity of saying, hey, at least our tough games are at home. And the Bills could say that too. But I don't know. I would be shocked if they come in here at 8-0.
You know, Brad, here's the thing. You have the best, arguably the best quarterback in football right now in Patrick Mahomes. If, to be honest, he is. You know, he just, when the big moment comes, he is there. Last year I thought the same thing. There's no way they go undefeated into this stretch. And then they did. They only lost one game all year. Well, they lost two, the one that mattered the most, and the one right after it. So, to me, that's a huge game for the Bills. It's a winnable one, but it's certainly one it feels like a must win depending upon where they are, because a lot of people right now don't even have the Chiefs winning their division. And that feels like last year when everyone didn't have the Bills winning the division, right? All these pundits are like, oh, they're going here, they're going, you know, this team's going to take the division. The Dolphins are going to take the division. No, the Jets are going to take the Bills, might not even make the playoffs. 13-3, make it to the AFC title game.
Yep.
So I trust star players, and I trust Patrick Mahomes.
Well, we'll see. That could be one of the matchups of the season to start out here, and that's only really at the halfway point. We look into the second half of the season, week 10, taking on the Miami Dolphins. I love playing the Miami Dolphins in Miami later in the season. Less likely for folks to get cramping, for heat stroke, for all that stuff that plagued them in that 2022 game, a game where Josh Allen threw for over 400 yards and they still lost. Guys were going down like flies in that game. Much more favorable. I love the week 10 matchup in Miami.
I do too, and I think Dolphins fans hating it even more make me love it even more. And, you know, those late week matchups against Miami are a little bit of a reprieve. It's going to be getting chillier in Buffalo at that time. And November 9th, you're probably getting snowfall, maybe your first snowfall of the year. Crazy. It's crazy. It feels like just yesterday, Brad, we were around November, you know?
Right.
But I like this a lot for the Bills going down to Miami, having a little bit of a warm shot down there.
And I just want to mention this right now. Currently, we're taping this on a Sunday afternoon. It's May 18th. Yeah, I just mowed my lawn, and I almost had to put a beanie on. It's that chilly out right now. I mean, it's 50s. Granted, it's not that bad. But, I mean, it feels like October, November outside right now here in Western New York.
Down in the southern tier, it is a bit more spicy. It's in the 70s here, but also no complaining on that.
Well, we say the Sunshine State in Florida may be the Sunshine section of New York there, down there in the southern tier. All right. We go to week 11 here, where Tampa Bay comes to Western New York, and I think this is a fun matchup as well. Baker Mayfield nearly stole one here against the Bills in prime time on a Thursday night. I think this is still a pretty decent team in Tampa, and I think this could be a good matchup, one of their last remaining 1 o'clock kickoff games in the season.
Yeah, and it's... you love the late 1 o'clock game. The Buccaneers have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, McMillan there. It's a really good group. I just think the Bills are more talented across the board.
Yeah, I think so, too.
We've seen the Bills time and time again win those games where it's like, you know, it's almost like the Jaguars game last year where it's like, this team's talented, but the Bills are just, the Bills, when it's like mid-level talent and elite talent, like elite talent's a gunfight. Low-level talent, we like to lose games against the worst teams ever. And then, like, the teams that are pretty talented, they're not the elite level ones, but they're pretty talented. The Bills wipe the floor with them.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, we can only speculate on how the season turns out at this point, but I think that is more favorable. I will take that here. Let's go to week 12. Interesting matchup in Houston. I believe the fact is that Buffalo's never won in Houston. I know that. And I believe Houston has never won here in Buffalo. Does Buffalo Alex get their first win ever at Reliance Stadium down there in Houston?
I think so, Brad. I also think that there might be a curse or something on the Texans, because always around this week, they have like 6 devastating injuries, and then they're looking for X, Y, and Z to get them over the finish line. I think the Bills get this one done, though.
All right, let's go down to week 13 at the Steelers. Their only time this year, I believe, they played back-to-back road games. And right now, at this juncture where we are right now, Kyle Rudolph is probably going to be the starting quarterback for the Steelers. Will Aaron Rodgers come in? Who the heck knows? Who knows at this point here? But I think this is a pretty favorable matchup for a Steelers team who continues to, you know, make the playoffs every year. But are they really great? Are they really elite? When was the last time they were really just elite under Mike Tomlin? I feel like you're going back to last time they went to the Super Bowl under him.
Yeah, probably pre-COVID, I would say. I mean, they were pretty good teams in 2018, 2019. I like the Bills matchup here. I think that Tomlin's always a tough out, but I think that you just outclass your opponent. You know, the defense is always good under Tomlin. The offense is going to chug along. But we saw last year what Mason Rudolph can do when he played here against the Titans. He got it done for half the game, but not... they couldn't close it out.
All right, let's go to week 14, where the Bills will host the Cincinnati Bengals at 4:25 Eastern Standard Time. We talk about Baltimore being a tough game coming in here. We talk about the defending AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs coming in here. We get the Super Bowl champions coming here this year. I feel like this week 14 matchup, this could be the toughest home game on the Bills schedule, if not the toughest game on the schedule.
Yeah, especially when you look at everything, like the classic trend of the Bengals, right? The Bengals are a team that do really well. They do really well at the end of the year and really poorly to start the year. And I could see them doing the exact same thing this year. When they're locked in, fully going, they are a deadly team. The problem is they seem like a stop-start team. You know, there's always something that comes up. There's always T. Higgins is down for 4 weeks. Oh, Jamar Chase is down for 3 weeks. Burrow hurt his hand. He's out for 3 weeks. Oh, they are a team that is constructed around its stars, and their stars are some of the best players in the NFL. However, NFL games are only played with 3 players. They're played with minimum 22. So you got starters on both sides, and their defense and their other pieces just don't seem up to snuff comparatively to with what the Bills have. But I agree, Brad. I think that's going to be one of the toughest.
All right, week 15 could potentially be tough on the road at New England. Because, you know, New England, I think, handles their own business at home. But we'll see. This could be a Patriot team really fighting for a wild card spot at that point. I mean, who knows where the Bills are at this point. I expect the Bills to win their division this year, but I think that Week 15 matchup could pose some difficulty for the Bills.
Yeah, I do too. You're going to be late in the season. You're going to be tired. You're coming off a really tough game against the Bengals. We could also see the opposite, Brad, where the Bills, let's say they lose a tough loss to the Bengals, and now they're angry. You know, pissed off Josh Allen is a tough one to face. And so I could see either that game is going to be a slugfest, or the Bills are going to come in and just kick the Patriots in the teeth and keep kicking until they feel the floor.
Well, let's segue to Week 16, where I think another interesting matchup at the Cleveland Browns, a 1 o'clock kickoff on the Sunday before Christmas. And the way I look at this one right now is, who's playing quarterback for Cleveland? That may be the most crowded quarterback room in the NFL, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
No, it is not, Brad.
I mean, they took two quarterbacks in the draft. I'm still scratching my head on why they took Shedeur Sanders, but then again, I realize that Jimmy Haslam owns the team, and he's the same one who made the GM go out and sign Deshaun Watson to a stupid guaranteed money contract.
Yeah. That team is going to be a bit of a dumpster fire. They're rebuilding. I mean, they have Myles Garrett, who is one of the best players in the NFL, bar none. And to be honest, Brad, I think that while, yes, there are a chance the Browns are good, I don't put it as that probable. I would put that as a low probability.
All right, Week 17, talked about it. The defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles coming here for a late afternoon kickoff right after Christmas. I think this could be a fantastic barn-burning shootout type of a game. Or it could also be a game where both these teams have what they needed to locked up. Maybe Philadelphia and Buffalo lock up the one seeds at this point. Could be, just saying, could be. Don't roast me on this one going forward, but I feel like this could be a high-scoring game like we saw with the Lions-Bills late in December last year, or it could be a game where even at Week 17, both teams are resting starters.
And this brings up a good point. The Eagles are the first team in NFL history to have five games where they have eight or more days of rest leading into the next game. So they play the Commanders on the 20th of December, and then they have 8 days to prepare versus the Bills. They play the Bears on November 28th, and then they play the Chargers on December 8th. They have quite a few marquee matchups, but with that so comes some more big rest in between a lot of these games. I think it was like five games where it was like rest of over 8 days. I can't remember the exact ones.
Yep. And in late December here in Western New York, that's the type of game where you're leaning on your ground attack. And I mean, for Philadelphia, I mean, they have the best running back in football in Saquon Barkley, but Buffalo also has, I think, one of the top running backs in football in James Cook. You know, we see Ray Davis taking a step in year two, and a guy that Josh Allen calls the best third down back in the NFL, and Ty Johnson. I think that could also be a very big round and pound type of game.
Yeah, I do too. I think it is going to be a pound the rock kind of game.
And two quarterbacks that can run.
Absolutely. It is going to be a slugfest, and if there was a blizzard game prediction, I think that's one of them.
All right, let's round it out right now. Week 18, they'll close out the old Highmarket Stadium in the regular season with the same opponent they kicked off with back in 73 in the regular season, a 9-7 win over the Jets. We'll see if they can close it out with a win over the Jets, but at this point, I would expect the Jets to be in the basement and Buffalo potentially resting starters, because I would hope at this point either they've locked up the division or they've locked up that one seed, which we're all hoping for this year.
Absolutely, Brad.
All right. So looking out at, you know, as a whole, Alex, we went through all 18 weeks of the season. What do you like Buffalo? What looks like a favorable record? A prediction without truly predicting. Just what's your pulse on where you see them finishing?
I think the ceiling, obviously, is you ceiling 16, right? If Bills play the way they can, there is a high probability they go undefeated. I think your floor is 10 wins. If you have 10 wins, and you beat all your divisional opponents, you're winning the division, and that's all that matters. Get into the playoffs. But I also think if 10 wins, things have gone horribly awry in some direction or another.
And Buffalo has come in where, you know, we talk about difficult schedules year in and year out. They have the sixth easiest schedule. Easiest, not difficult, easiest schedule. That bodes well for this team here this year. A team where I think they're getting younger and they're firing off all cylinders during this season. You know, this is a team fighting to win their first Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, six easiest comparatively to strength, like I'm assuming wins from last season. But at the same time, like, there's the Ravens, tough opponent, Dolphins, tough, Pats, tough, Falcons, tough, Panthers, tough, Chiefs, tough, Dolphins, Bucks, Texans, Steelers, Bengals, Eagles. You play the Patriots twice. You play the Dolphins twice. I understand you could have the six easiest on paper, but year to year, we see that constantly change.
This is true. Other thoughts on the schedule?
I think it's a top one, but I think this is what you expect when you're the top flight team, right? If you're to be the man, you got to beat the man.
All right. Well, this is the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast from the R Street Media Studios in Greater Buffalo, New York. Find it across our social media online at drafthousesports.com. Follow us across Twitter at DHS Buffalo. Follow Alex at TW Callahan DHS. You can follow me at Bills Bruiser. You can also find us at Facebook.com/Buffalo Bills Draft House. All right, let's go ahead and rewind back here to about 2.5 weeks ago with the NFL draft in Green Bay. I absolutely loved it there. I thought it was a great venue. Pack Nation is just tons of fun. I love Packer fans. And I hope that we have a draft like that. I hope Buffalo gets a draft here. I think 2028-29 is what they bid for. I would really hope they get one so we could do a draft like that. I thought it was a big success from a venue standpoint.
Absolutely, Brad. I think bringing them to those small market teams where you really get to see, you know, the fans so excited and committed and loving everything, it makes it feel more special.
All right, well, Buffalo picked at the end of the first round. They did not trade up in the first round or trade out of it like last year. They held pat. They picked at number 30, and they took cornerback Maxwell Hairston at Kentucky. And, you know, day after, I'm hearing all his interviews. I'm seeing his tape and everything. And if you want to compare him to a former and now current Bill, I'd say he reminds me a lot of Trey White, that personality, that fire, a guy who attacks the football. I love this pick.
I do too, Brad, and he's slightly quicker than Trey White. Trey Wright was a 4.3 guy. Max Harrison's a 4.2 speed guy, and you see that translate to the field. He's a guy who's not afraid to take some risks if he sees an opportunity to take them, and I think within the Bills system, that is a good thing to have. I think they're going to have him really running and gunning and making plays out there, letting him feel comfortable in zones, giving him early concepts to make him successful.
I think it was a very important pick to go ahead and draft the cornerback room. I think there's some voids out there this year. Obviously, Rasul Douglas is still on the market, and I think that's part of what I alluded to earlier, that Brandon Bean is trying to get this roster younger. And I think that was the way to go. They brought in some veterans back to this organization. Dane Jackson comes back. Trey White comes back. And then they draft a guy who I think is going to be poised to start. I don't think we could look at him as the same way as Kaiir Elam. Elam came in here as a late-round pick in the first round. He never panned out. I feel this is completely different.
I agree, and I think when you watch Harrison's tape and you watch Elam's tape, they're two different things, right? Elam's tape was like he's a raw prospect who doesn't really do well in coverage. Harrison is a very good coverage corner. He had led the SEC in picks with five. He was a guy that teams just started to say, you know what, we're not going to his side of the field last year. They just literally were like, we're not throwing it over there. We'll throw it to the other side. And so he's the type of guy who is that type, that shutdown number one corner.
All right, let's go into the second round where the Buffalo Bills move up and they draft defensive tackle T.J. Sanders out of South Carolina. Had four sacks last year and seven tackles for a loss, 50 tackles for the Gamecocks last game. Gamecocks last year, second all SEC in 2024. Also posted 16 starts and 39 career games. How do you like this selection?
I like it a lot. You know, he's a guy who he has some real upside in pass rushing. Can play one tech, can play three tech, a lot of versatility there. You kind of move him around where you want him. Really good run stopper, really big freak athlete. It was, to me, it was the perfect choice there. The Bills had to pay a little bit to get up, but at the same time, that's the choice they had to make.
Yeah, they went up and they also went down because let's remember they had two second round picks. They move up in the second round, but then they move back into the third round where they did not have a third round pick, and they take Landon Jackson out of Arkansas, 72nd overall. Before we get into him too much, I know the young man is dealing with alopecia, and it's cool that he's an advocate for him, but like whenever I see a picture of him, I can't help but seeing Anthony Carrigan, who plays NoHo Hank from the series Barry, is the bad guy on that. I see that every time. There's no offense meant whatsoever. It's just what I see.
Well, yeah, they look similar. He's also Victor Zsasz in the Gotham series.
Yes.
I agree. And I think Landon Jackson was a great pick. To be honest with you, a guy that you could have talked about in the first round and been okay with and getting him at 72, you're like, Brandon Bean ran that one up to the podium himself, drove all the way to Green Bay to drop that off because he's a guy with power upside. He's got a high motor, high compete, really built out at 6'6". He looks the part of, to be honest with you, he looks the part of a superhero villain or a villain in that side of the show. Like, it wouldn't be shocking to see him play that. And there are parts of his game he needs to develop, but he's kind of coming into the perfect room where the Bills can kind of take their hands off a little bit and be like, you know what, you're just going to spend this year developing, learning, getting your bodies right. We just need to teach you the little stuff.
The one question I have here, though, is I've heard the comparison point out here, so I have to ask you. I've heard him compared to AJ Epenesa with the bigger upside. Do you see that?
I do and I don't. Epenesa was, so they're both power rushers. Epenesa, though, mainly won through his bull rush. He had bulked up to 285 and was playing slower. Landon Jackson is not a slow player. He brings power and speed and violence. To be honest, he's kind of like Greg Rousseau in that they both, like, he has, and he is the guy. Because these defensive line groups, both edge and interior defensive line, were so deep this year, that's a guy who would normally take a high second round. You know, think about the Bills got AJ Epenesa in the second round, and he tested slower than Landon Jackson. And I think the Bills, essentially, Landon Jackson has the power of AJ Epenesa, but the size that the Bills wanted, that basically took a year for the Bills to get AJ Epenesa to. 265, 6'6 is a rare combination, and he has very little body fat. He is trimmed, toned, and ready to go. I love this pick, and he could be a guy who, if the Bills are able to develop him, could turn into a real threat across the board.
Here's someone who I think could turn into a real threat here. In their fourth round, 109th pick, they took Deion Walker out of Kentucky. Now, Deion was already mentioned by Hairston, teammates there at Kentucky. Is like, oh, if we get Deion, it's over. And interesting, I'm affiliated with folks here who actually worked with his dad. His dad was a truck driver for a big national company out there in Detroit, Michigan. Walker played for Detroit Country Day in high school before going on to the Bluegrass State here. 6'7", 331 pounds, big kid, started 36 of 37 games, had 132 total tackles, 22 of those were for a loss, 10 sacks, a two-time team captain, and this is a guy who could lead, who has size, who has had a lot of production in the SEC, where it's a very tough conference to play football. Love this pick in the fourth round.
Absolutely, and he was dealing all last year with back injuries. Back injuries are really, you know, tough. If he had come out of the draft a year sooner, he likely would have been a first-round pick. You know, with that size, that speed, and the ability to play across the board at every single position. He played every single position at Kentucky. He played one tech. He played three tech. He played defensive end. So, with that level of versatility with having that speed and everything, he feels like a guy the Bills are going to really take their time with. You know, you're going to see a real slow play from Sean McDermott on this one. I think they're going to try to get his body right. They're going to get him at the weight they want him to, getting on the right diet, making sure that back is good. And then once he gets rolling, I'm excited to see what he can bring, because guys with that height and weight rarely have his level of athleticism.
All right, let's go ahead and move down to round five, where the Buffalo Bills at 170th overall from Dallas, a compensatory pick. They took defensive back here, Jordan Hancock, out of Ohio State. He played in 42 games in his career. He had 98 tackles, 2.5 sacks, 3 interceptions. How do you see this playing out? I think, obviously, the later you get here, the more depth pieces you're finding on your roster, and I think that's where he is at this point.
I've heard so many people, upper-level draft people, love this play. A lot of people have been saying future Teron Johnson. He also has some upside as a safety. So I think he's a high-tempo guy, athletic, sticks his nose in there and plays a rough style of football, can make some plays on the ball, played at the highest level, won a national championship, never beat Michigan. Who said that? But I really think that this is one of those classic defensive back picks where we're going to look back and be like, how did they let Sean McDermott take this guy in the fifth round?
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, a guy who could come up there. I mean, Buffalo has hit on their late-round picks under Brandon Bean. I mean, look at Christian Benford, sixth-round pick out of Villanova, and he beat out the first-round pick his very first season with the Buffalo Bills. So, no, this can hit. And the fact
and
that,
Brad, mm-hmm. that this pick was the pick traded for Kyrie Long.
Crazy. Crazy how that worked out. Wow. Okay. Let's go down to round five. 173rd pick. They take a tight end, Jackson Hawes, out of Georgia Tech. And I think this is an interesting move. Quentin Morris, now officially, no, he's not going to be a Buffalo Bill, at least not to start out the year. He already went and signed with Jacksonville. We didn't re-sign him. Wonderful. I think this is a smart pick, a guy who a lot of these rookies are going to be tasked to play special teams, but I think a guy who in that tight end room with a really good Dawson Knox, with Dalton Kincaid, who is battling injuries, looks to fight back. Adding this guy into that tight end room gives this kid a great opportunity to grow and learn, and I like this pick in round five.
I like it too. To me, he feels like Lee Smith, and that is me.
That's a huge compliment.
We are the biggest Lee Smith fan podcast.
Yes,
we've been on the Lee Smith train for years.
Way back. Like drought Lee Smith fans on this podcast.
Yes, and he feels like that type of guy. He feels like a guy who's going to bring some grit, some sandpaper. Which, to be honest with you, the Bills really haven't. They don't have those guys
who are a little gritty, who are willing to get dirty, who you give Jackson Hawes seven plays, he's going to get into a minor scuffle in five of them, and he's got the other guy so mad at him that he punches in the helmet, and then he's looking around like, what'd I do? It just feels like a dude who brings a different level of physicality. You hear every interview with him, and he's a guy who just loves violence and loves committing acts of violence in the white lines of a football field. That, to me, sounds like a guy who the Bills have tapped as sort of like, hey, you're going to be our blocking tight end. Also catch two balls a year. Sounds good? Sounds good.
All right, let's segue down to round six, where the Buffalo Bills at 177th overall take Dorian Strong, a cornerback out of Virginia Tech, played five seasons at Tech, hit 112 tackles, two tackles for a loss, seven interceptions, 28 passes defended in 2024, recorded his career high in tackles at 32 with six pass breakups and two interceptions. How do you like this pick late? Another strong cornerback I see late round.
Yeah, he's a guy who excels in zone. That's where he plays most of it. And to be honest with you, this feels like another guy who has the possibility of just rising up through the ranks and being a really legit guy. He's going to take a few years. He'll probably be a core four special teamer. But he feels like a Dane Jackson type who's, you know, he's not going to get beat. He's not going to get beat crazy. He's not the best athlete in the world, but he excels in zone. He'll make a play. He'll be a guy who will stick his nose in there and make a tackle. I loved it.
All right. In the sixth round, Buffalo went and decided to go offensive line with their 206th pick. They take Chase Lunt out of UConn. Guy who started 49 games here for the Huskies, played with current Buffalo Bill and former Husky Ryan Vandermark, helped the team get to a 9-4 record. I like this pick in a guy where you're trying to, as we've said before, we led up to the draft here, you're trying to stock the cupboards. This is very much a stock the cupboard, build depth kind of pick, and I like it.
Absolutely. He is a freak athlete at the tackle. A lot of people had him as a fourth round pick, and being able to get him in a late sixth round is, to be honest, it's a great selection for like a personal one.
All right, so
I loved it.
Round out the draft with wide receiver. I think something that, you know, I would have liked if they went wide receiver early on, but I don't criticize what they did in the draft at all. I think they did this draft absolutely right. What do you think of Caden Prather? Is this a guy who you think will make the team and could potentially get some snaps at wide receiver? Where right now, the way the cupboards are stocked, I think the Bills have a pretty competitive wide receiver room as it stands.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who's maybe more in the like Mark Seasley special teams kind of role. He's an athlete, like 4.4. Late 4.4 speed, so not a burner, but he does have some juice to him. Feels almost like a Matt Collins type of player, right? A guy who can be a special teamer, can go out there as a gunner, as a jammer, as a kickoff block guy, and maybe, you know, if you need him like Big Kumro to have like, hey, we have 10 snaps for you a game, he'd be excited by that. I love it. I also do love the, I forget who it was, someone in the Buffalo media tweeted out, start the Justin Shorter hype train. He's going to be the guy Bills fans talk about as maybe a great receiver. If we just gave him some snaps and, you know, in 2.5 years, he's off the team. But in all honesty, I think he gives more special teams upside than anybody else.
And just to list the wide receivers on this roster, all right, so Jalen Virgil, they have Chanel, they have Shavers, you talked about there, Khalil Shakir, led the Bills in receiving yards at the receiver position, Curtis Samuel, Caden Prater, Joshua Palmer, and then they pick up Elijah Morlaight along the go with K.J. Hamlin and Keon Coleman. I don't know. This wide receiver room, just reading off those names, I feel pretty good.
I really like that team, that wide receiver group. I think Elijah Moore brings something that we really haven't had. That's straight line speed guy. And to be honest with you, he's never played with a good quarterback.
he went from Zach Wilson.
Yep.
To Deshaun Watson in Cleveland. So who has he played with who's given him success to, you know, really be successful? Elijah Moore is like going to be like a really sneaky, like, that's a sleeper candidate. If he looks good in camp, that's a guy you grab at the end of your fantasy draft because he could have a couple big games. If you're going against a slow corner, I don't hate being like, hey, Elijah Moore, we're going to run you 5 goal balls. Let's see if the defense can keep up with you.
And here's,
because if I remember correctly, he's a 4.2 speed guy. He was like a 4.26 or something like that.
Yeah, and he was someone I think that had Buffalo had a first round pick in that draft, they probably may have taken him in the first round. Or that was a year after. I was going to say that was the Epinesa draft. No, it was the draft where they took Groot as their first pick. But regardless, I think a guy who could have very well been on the roster before that, I like the speed that he brings. The question I want to ask you about the receiver room, weeks ago after the draft, Brandon Bean went on the local sports station here in Buffalo and basically started out giving his displeasure with the guys on the morning show about their, you know, wanting to be in the wide receiver train and that Buffalo hadn't done enough. I don't know how much you heard of that interview, but just curious what you think on any of those comments surrounding the Bills and the wide receiver.
I think it's stupid, to be honest. Plain and simple, Brad. I think it's a dumb take. The Bills had an incredible wide receiver room last year. They threw for a bajillion yards. They added Josh Palmer. And they added Laviska Shenault, who I really like. I think he might be our starting return man. I think it might be him and Ty Johnson back there. He's a guy who has some of that juice, some of that upside. He's one of those athletes who can make a play on end rounds and things like that. I think it's a bad take, personally. You have Khalil Shubakubek, who's looking like a borderline, if he continues up, is looking like a borderline all-star next year. Keon Coleman's only going to get better. His body's finally healthy. He played with a broken wrist, I believe, all season. Most of the season, I think it was Seattle, played through it, didn't complain, didn't say anything. And, you know, it's one of those things, Brad. The only person that left was Matt Collins and Amari Cooper. And you brought in Josh Palmer, who had a billion yards playing for a slightly inept offense. I love it. I like this wide receiver group, and I think it's stupid to go, hey, you know how there's a ton of defensive value in this draft, and there's not that much value in the wide receiver room? Force a pick. Just take somebody. We need somebody. Just take somebody. Your offensive, your draft philosophy should be every 4 years, you should take either an offensive or defensive lineman in the first round.
Well, let me ask you this, and I only ask you because you brought up the name. Amari Cooper still out there as a free agent. Any chance you see him on this Bills roster? I think it's too crowded at this point that ship has sailed.
Listen, talent is talent. If Amari Cooper was like that minimum deal, let's throw some upsides in there in case I hit specific receiving goals, I don't hate that at all. I legitimately don't hate the idea because you can never have enough talent, right? Your worst case scenario is you end up cutting one of these guys on a 1 year deal. Okay. But to be honest with you, like, there is so much talent in this wide receiver room. Adding more talent can't hurt.
All right, any final thoughts here on the Bills schedule or their draft class? Is probably our next podcast will be closer towards minicamp coming up in June.
Yeah, I loved some of the UDFA signings too. I'm interested in seeing Puntapalooza. The Bills didn't take anybody. I was a little disappointed. My guy Brendan Hall didn't end up in Buffalo. There is some very interesting names in this group. To me, Wandae Owens out of New Hampshire has a real shot. I could see him sneaking onto the roster, to be honest with you. I could see him being a guy who can get onto our roster and sneak in there. Another one to watch is Kaliki Latu out of Washington, 6'7", 250.
Big tight end.
Big tight end, and the Bills love a big tight end.
Yeah, and that was my question that I didn't ask. Thank you for segueing into that, Alex. Any UDFAs that you like there? So there we go. Other final thoughts here, Alex?
You know, go Bills, baby.
Go Bills. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast. Remind you that you can find us all across the World Wide Web. It all starts at our website at DraftHouseSports.com. Find us across Twitter at DHS Buffalo, at TW Kellyanne DHS. Follow me at Bills Bruiser. And, of course, you can find us at Facebook, facebook.com/BuffaloBillsDrafthouse. For Alex Jones, I'm Brad the Bruiser Eichhorn. Go Bills.
This has been the Buffalo Bills Draft House Podcast.
Available on Spotify, Odyssey, Prime Music, Audible, or wherever you get your podcast.
An R Street Media production.